It's time for the show that brings the magic right to your speakers. Ears Up!
Hey, welcome everybody. Ears Up Podcast. And I'm glad you guys are here. I'm glad I'm here because we have a great show for you today. Not only are we talking about details of Disneyland that we both love and dislike, I hesitate to even use the word hate right now because I'm so sensitive to it. But
it is a strong word.
It's a strong word. But we're doing five things about the Disneyland Resort that we love, absolutely love, and then also five that we don't really like, that we hate, that we could do without, or whatever. And I'm going to tell you, man, this exercise was tough for me.
Yep.
It was very, very challenging, and not in the way that you would think. I'm going to leave that there. I'm going to put a pin in that section, and we're going to do a little bit of sensationalist journalism here, everybody. It was really neat, especially because I haven't been to the parks in like 2 or 3 years. I had to look stuff up to see if it was there. I had to like watch walkthroughs.
Yeah, I had to go back through my old photos, like way back, like 2014 is I think the furthest I could
geez.
Go. And just look through things to try, because I used to take a lot of pictures of details at Disneyland because I used to do Instagram for Ears Up. So like I went through all that to try and remember details of the parks. It was weird.
Yeah, it's tough, man. You're sitting there going through your mind like, okay, so you walk in, you go around the thing. And then you're done Main Street. Is anything Main Street? Okay, now usually we turn left here. We go into Adventureland. Are we doing anything? Anyway, I don't know. We also have, coming back, Dave from DaveLandWeb.com to talk to us a little bit about the House of Tomorrow. Dave, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back.
Of course. We're going to put on a little slideshow. So you people listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, you're going to get to see photos of what it is we're talking about. I understand it's a podcast and the visual, section of this is going to be hard to follow along. But if you're listening to the show, you can either stop it and go watch it on YouTube or, you know, listen all the way through and then go watch on YouTube. Or I'm trying to link to everything on the blog post here. And I don't know if I'll be able to do that. Maybe I'll just link to this section on YouTube and we can do it that way, but we'll figure it out anyway. Maybe I'll link to the House of Tomorrow section from Dave's website. And we can just sort of figure it all out there so you can do a deeper dive if you want. But, you know, I thought it'd be a really cool idea. Dave pitched it, and I said, yep, this is great. I love it, man, because not only do we get to hear about stuff that isn't around anymore, but we get to look at it, too. And I feel like that's a rare combination.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Okay, let's see here. Let me go through my little notarinos. We're on social media, you guys, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. You can send feedback to Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. Show suggestions, Terrence at earsup-podcast.com. You could say hi.
Hi.
to Bev. And if you have any tips on how to fight ants, email those to me at jason@earsup-podcast.com. We are like ant invasion central. It's D-Day here at the Petros household. And ants are the allies. And we are the beaches of Normandy.
It's the actual worst thing in the world.
It sucks so bad, dude.
Ants are the worst.
They really are. And I understand they're a really important part of the ecosystem. Like, I get it. There was a dead bug in my garden, and the ants are all over that. I'm like, okay, this is what you're here for. That's cool. But you're not here to eat my soap out of my bathroom or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, get out of here.
They don't know that.
I know they don't know that, but they should. And if they don't...
Aren't ladybugs good for that? Isn't that what they're... I think they sell them in hardware stores in little bags.
You know what? I bought a little baggie of, it was like a little container of praying mantis, you know? And my kid and I watched them kind of come out of the little paper cocoon or whatever. There's like 200 of them. So, let's release them into the garden. And we released them into the garden and they just kind of fluttered everywhere and whatever. About 4 hours later, the gardeners came with like the industrial blower.
Gone.
All over. The plants were moving like it was a hurricane. I'm like, okay, we're never going to see those things again.
Probably should have planned that differently.
Yeah, they're in the next town over by now, man. Blown apart by the gale force winds.
Those things can hold on, though. I saw one once stuck to the side of a car on the freeway.
Wow.
Just hanging on. And I was
hanging
like,
on for dear life, man.
Oh, dear.
anyway, RIP that guy. All those guys, the 200.
Those guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand it. Anyway, Dave, let's talk about the House of Tomorrow, man.
The actual name is the House of the Future.
The House of the Future. Why do I keep thinking? Look, one thing about me is I will always get things incorrect.
You're thinking that because it was in Tomorrowland.
Yes. Yep. That's exactly Let's say it was that.
Monsanto, the company that is now famous for all their deadly fertilizers and all that stuff and has a bad rep. Back in the day, in the 50s, they were looking for a way to showcase some of their plastic products. And it was two guys that worked at, I think they were on the faculty for MIT. Let's see, it was Marvin Goody and Richard Hamilton, those two guys. They were tasked with coming up with designing this plastic house that had, you know, had clothes made out of plastics, all these things that Monsanto made from plastics, and they wanted to have a showcase. So this is what they came up with. Nice. Walt thought it would be a great fit for Disneyland. So Monsanto had a 10-year lease at Disneyland. They sponsored the Hall of Chemistry and the House of Tomorrow. And that's how that came to be at Disneyland. Wow. Very obviously low cost for Walt because it was an advertisement.
Right.
Yeah.
Very futuristic looking, as you can see, that kind of bubble look. There's a shot, if you want to get to it, of the brain trust at the table looking at a little model of it, which is kind of cool. It had like four little wings and then a central area.
Okay.
There's the guy studying the model of it.
Cool. Look at that flat top, man. You could probably rest that model on the flat top and that would never move.
Extremely mid-century.
Yeah, I never realized
Chris Mullen of Golden State Warriors fame.
He does look like that. God, he really looks like that. I never realized that this House of the Future was like a plus sign. I always thought it was just like that corner part.
No, it's definitely like a cross or plus look. Now, guess how long it took to construct it at Disneyland? Just think of how long it would take to build a house.
I don't know.
But it's made out of plastic.
A month?
5 months?
I guess.
5 months is right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Had to happen at some point.
Yeah, there's some interesting construction pictures that I sent your way. One, ooh. Yeah. There's a cool one.
That is neat.
That almost looks like an airplane. Some of it
was prefabricated and then installed on site. There's another one that shows the castle in the background, which kind of gives you an idea of the location of where it was. So today that area is approximately where Pixie Hollow is.
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
And the foundation was like solid concrete. The thing was earthquake proof. And I heard one of you saying something about, you know, it was easy to make because it was a plastic. One of the most famous stories, and it is true, when it came time to dismantle it, the wrecking ball bounced off of it. They ended up having to hacksaw. It took them like, I think, an extra 2 months to tear that thing apart because they had to hacksaw it into pieces.
Wow.
Longer to tear down than to put together.
That is correct. That tells you why landfills are an issue. And
yeah.
That's funny.
I like this photo because it definitely gives you a nice sense of scale. You know, yeah. You don't have a lot of the bushes in the way or the bigger trees or whatever. It's still very, like, low, you know, construction-looking photo. But that castle right there by the house, it looks, that's a really cool shot. I like that.
Yeah, it is.
Now,
yeah, it
is. As of last time I was at the park, I don't know if it's been removed, but that concrete foundation, there are still remnants of it.
Yep.
Right around where some of the fountains, there were fountains underneath. And, you know, after it was gone, it became, I think, Alpine Gardens. Then it was Ariel's Grotto and then Pixie Hollow.
Hmm.
I don't think they ever removed that concrete foundation. I think they just kind of like planted and built and landscaped around it. So that was always kind of cool. It never completely left.
Yeah. I might be getting ahead of myself. There's no
That shot, that's a detail shot. So in front of that, I mean, you can see the Mark Twain in the background, but that's where the... Carnation Bandstand, and now it's, was it Fantasy Fair?
Yep.
Oh, right.
That whole area is?
That is incredible.
Oh, yes. Yeah, like right about here, yeah. Right? Because here's the bridge that's going across.
Yeah. Yep.
You could never see the Mark Twain from there right now.
No way.
There's literally no way.
I literally have like the worst sense of direction, and I'm like, what am I looking at right now? Like, I don't know where I am.
If you're looking straight, please correct me if I'm wrong, someone. So if you're looking, straight across, it would be where, like you said, Fantasy Fair. It will be the back way into Frontierland that would take you to the left side of Rancho de Zocalo.
Yeah.
And then take you into where the loading area is for the Mark Twain. But you could never see that because of the buildings that are there now.
Yeah. So
where that picture was taken, I'm guessing they were... Can you go back to the original one there, Jason?
This one?
Yeah, I'm guessing they were standing approximately where maybe the Buzz Lightyear attraction is. Not too far from that.
Okay.
You can't even get that perspective anymore. You couldn't stand because there's either trees or actually the Astro Orbiter.
Yeah. I was going to say, it looks like this might be where the French fry rocks would be when you go into.
Yeah, that's probably more appropriate, right around there. Hmm. The Matterhorn was not even constructed at this point.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
There's another shot that looks like it's just a field. Which was probably a little bit early. Okay, so that one to the left, see where it creeps up? That was when it was Snow Hill or Matter or Holiday Hill.
Lover's Hill. Yeah.
So you can see one of the pylons for the Skyway kind of above, which was eventually covered up by the Matterhorn itself. And then that building to the right, that would be the Buzz Lightyear footprint.
Got it.
Wow.
And then if you can zoom in, I think this is the one that might be there. There was one detail shot that shows kind of a little bit of an ad. Not that one. And I don't know who those goofballs are. There you go. There's an ad for the Junior Autopia. There used to be like, was it three different Autopias?
Yeah.
Fantasyland, the Junior Autopia, the Midget Autopia, and the regular Autopia.
Just what everyone needs,
that's
man.
That's three too many.
And there's the pylon for the Skyline or Skyway.
Yeah. Buckets. Look at that.
That
man.
Is incredible.
Look at that truck.
I love these.
Which
photos.
Apparently Walt always hated those because he just thought that they were unsightly. So the Matterhorn was a great solution to cover up part of it.
Absolutely. Look at this Ed Asner looking dude over here.
Look at those.
It's always interesting to see those. There's a mix of like the construction looking guys and then the suits with the bow ties. And
This dude right here with his tails beyond his butt cheeks.
Please.
Yeah. I love it, man. This is a rad shot, too. Look at that.
And then the opening day shot. That might be a good one to show next.
Okay, let's do it.
So even though, you know, you might think this is kind of boring, it came with a lot of fanfare. So this is the detailed shot. Shows the executives at the opening door about to let people inside to take a look. The Disneyland band is down below. There are quite a few people lined up to check it out.
Yeah.
I mean,
there were
Monsanto
people there. In fact, I think typically they had the Monsanto people with an M on their jacket for Monsanto that were there giving the tours, promoting the products. This was a great showcase for them. It made a few magazines, some color spreads. So some of the things that were, you know, besides like plastic clothes, the house had, you know, it showed off like microwaves, dishwashers, you know, at the time, and intercom systems. These were things that were not typically found in homes and the average home. But if you look at pictures of the interior, it didn't necessarily look like it was a rich person's home. It just looked like something from the future.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I actually love that kitchen.
I was just going to say that table is like, I want to own it.
Yeah. This is very in style.
Today, it's very stylish.
Yeah.
People pay big money for that kind of stuff.
I was just going to say, you're paying a lot of money for that. For this lamp right here. Yeah.
But if you look at it, you wouldn't look at that and say, oh, wow, that's the home of someone who's loaded.
No.
It just looks like a really nice retro middle class home, like something you know, would see in a TV show.
Yeah.
There's a detail of the chair, which was made by, was it the Barrage Company?
Yeah. Looks comfy to me, man.
It's kind of like going through a museum.
Definitely. I'm not joking. I think my mom had chairs like that. They were orange.
So there were also, and the little boy sitting there, that's, I don't know if that was intentional, but they also had some like a little sculpture garden. which was kind of cool right outside.
Of course, he sat that way on purpose. Actually, you know what? I don't know. Looking at that face, maybe not.
That was an unfortunate choice for the photo, but.
I don't know.
Or fortunate.
Yeah. I laughed. Yeah. These two ladies are twins.
You can see they also had some other material on Monsanto describing what was inside.
For it being Tomorrowland, it's very colorful. Like the plants and things. We're not used to seeing color in Tomorrowland. I guess, is it Tomorrowland, technically?
It was right on the edge of Tomorrowland. Okay. This I think, was the exit.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, though? There's a lot of shorts.
I just said that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And because we talk about that all the time, where it's like, oh, you're dressing up. You're in Disneyland. Like, that's a lot of these photos are of people that are dressed up. But there's a few shorts here, and I think that's very interesting. Look at this kid.
Typically, the adult males, though, do have pants on. Yeah. Rarely do you see an adult male, but kids and sometimes the women, yeah.
That poor old man in this photo is, like, literally
wearing
a suit.
Go back to that other photo and look at that kid's hat. What was that?
It looks like...
I do have a detail. It's kind of like an Alpine hat that they sold there. They sold a lot of different varieties of hats, but it was kind of like a little... yodeler type hat, which was tied into the Matterhorn.
And is he carrying a Bible?
Probably.
I don't know about that, but
look at that.
This shot is probably one of the last shots I have in my collection. It was from July 67, right around maybe 6 months before the house was removed.
It does look a little funny with the Matterhorn in the background.
On which angle you shoot it at.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've got a few pictures of this room. In this particular one, which I think is from later, they have like that small little TV.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones had what we would call the widescreen TV sitting on top of that console there.
Uh-oh.
Which, you know, back then, widescreen, that was really mod.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Here's another version.
God, I just...
A little farther over.
Yep.
Same room.
That color combo is fire. I'm not even gonna lie.
Who would ever choose that purple and like a light yellow and then black couch? Like this whole thing is this is my jam.
That is fire. It's so good.
It's like a Mary Blair thing.
Yeah.
These fabrics were synthetic, so they were really promoting everything that you could do with plastic.
Totally not flammable.
I really like the frame, like the blue with the gold.
I was just gonna say I hate the frame.
Really? Dang.
So I have in the second round of shots, Dave, I think this is what you're talking about. Let me pop this up here for a second.
There's an entrance. So the first one to have, that was like the rendering, the artistic rendering.
Yeah.
And then the other shots I sent to you, I think were before it was opened. It shows when they were decorating, like, the kitchen area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the kitchen area, you can see the cabinets, and they were labeled. And I noticed when I zoomed in on one part, I can't remember if I sent that to you or not, sugar and detergent were right next to each other. Which I found very, there we go. We got...
Oh, geez. Coffee.
Yeah, detergent. I think that's the one on the right. And sugar is right next to it on the left.
What is this? Sharpener?
What is that?
Sharpener, yeah.
Like MSG, you had a bin of MSG. Sharpener, tea, coffee, flour, sugar.
Detergent. What is sharpener?
Detergent.
Probably the detergent was for the sharpener, could have been for knives. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they had like a futuristic
knife sharpener.
Yeah.
Well, assuming those two things were supposed to be like microwaves or.
Oh, yeah, there's a turkey in there.
Yeah, look at that thing.
And a bathtub.
Oh, my gosh. And probably like a bowl for vegetables.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
No, yeah, it's a bathtub. Like,
there's also a turkey in there.
It's so clean and crisp.
I love this, like the supports that are holding up the cabinets and stuff. Classic 60s mid-mod sort of like flair.
It actually makes me very uncomfortable. Cabinets make me very nervous. I just think they're going to fall.
What?
What?
Cabinets make me nervous.
Every time I
look up this phobia, it has to be a thing.
I just don't know what's in them.
Every time I put a stack of plates in our cabinets, I'm like, one of these times it's just going to fall. Like, how are they even, how are they on the wall? I need to see
it. I legit understand that. And I've actually encountered a cabinet that fell off of a wall due to too much weight. It wasn't in my kitchen. It was at the office I worked at. We were putting away prescription pads, like a bunch of paper products. And it
You just added to her phobia.
Yeah.
You realize that?
No, that happened at my work, too.
We were putting away bricks.
It's terrifying and loud.
Well, in good construction, usually they're drilled into the stud, and you don't have to worry about that.
So there is a phobia that's a fear of cabinets. It's cystulophobia. So you're not the only person in the world who's afraid of cabinets.
I think he was a a character in some French, you know, romance novel. Cystulophobia.
So in this shot, you can see on the left, it says Adams for life.
Yeah.
It's interesting because once the House of the Future left, Monsanto continued their sponsorship with the, what was the one with the Adams?
Oh, the Interspace, Adventure Through Interspace?
Yeah, Adventure Through Interspace, which was, Miracle of Molecules was the song. So that was another one of their plastic marvels. So they just moved from the House of the Future to the Miracle of Molecules.
Oh,
look at this kid.
There's some guy that was filming a spot for a...
Whoa.
This sort of looks like a scene for Blade Runner. I don't know why.
or Mad Men.
Yeah.
For sure.
Are those lights on the top, or is that just the top of the building?
That's dope.
I think they're lights.
This is the only room I don't like.
The kitchen?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like it just because. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's too white.
I mean, it is still being put together.
I think they were before it was finished.
Oh,
yeah, because you got a box down here.
It's pretty sparse.
Gotcha. But it does have food.
Plastic apples.
Lots of things in bags and
lots
boxes.
Of things in baggies prepared. Yeah. Look at this package right there. It's wound up really nice. That's very cool.
They're probably buried under there now in the landfill.
Probably, man. Someone's going to be digging through trying to get all that treasure.
I think there's one vintage picture you haven't shown, which is one of my favorite, the lady with the orange bag.
I have, yes, I will get back to that set here. Let's go. Because then that's the set with your other favorite photos. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Miracle.
Bev, you're just wrong. Molecules. That's a beautiful frame.
I just think that, like,
so girl.
You know what? Let's just move on to this.
We'll
person.
Table that.
Yeah.
This is May 1963.
She's
Chucky.
Is she a cheerleader?
There's a. You can see on that. There's a yellow piece of. I think it's maybe one of the guidebooks behind the orange pom pom and the white purse.
That's what I'm asking.
Oh my gosh! Is that a hat?
I think it's a hat.
I think it's a hat.
That's dope.
No.
That's a Yo Gabba Gabba hat. That's awesome. Love it.
She puts it on, makes that fizz face.
The original Devo hat.
Yeah, look at
she
that.
She looks pretty futuristic there. Very mod.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, imagine spending a day in Disneyland in these shoes.
Oh my gosh. Well, Disneyland was a lot smaller then, so.
Still
a lot of walking though.
That's true. At that.
Wow.
I love it.
Awful.
I love it. Okay, so I guess we can lead into with what's coming next, Dave, with this photo.
So I still remember when they announced, I think it was in 2008, that they were going to bring back the House of the Future, and I thought, that is a cool idea. And they were going to put it where the Carousel of Progress was, and I didn't know how they were going to exactly achieve it. And it was one of those things, kind of like when I first saw California Adventure when it was first opened.
Yeah.
The disappointment was just off the charts.
That is fair.
So this is an interior of the it was called the Innoventions House of the Future. Yep.
Okay.
And they had a model, which I guess was being used to like a computer stand. So they had a little tribute to the original House of the Future in there.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, and I think, Jason, you've said this a few times, it just was basically a Home Depot showcase. It wasn't so much a showcase of futuristic technologies as technologies that were available to rich people. And it was designed with just like the most crazy, incredible Disney theme. It was just like, a really, really expensive hotel suite that you could probably never afford. So, you know, the original House of the Future, you kind of felt like it in the future, it might be within your grasp if you were middle class.
Sure. Yes.
This place, Interventions, it was a dream home because you never could dream unless you were very affluent. I mean, if you go through some of the other pictures, I mean, who could afford a place like this?
Quite got a grasp of like what it was that was so exciting about it because literally nothing worked.
That looks like that could be in the Grand Californian.
Yeah.
I think what they did is they raided the warehouse at Grand Californian for leftover hotel furniture.
Yeah.
And they put it in here because it saved them money and they used like a craftsman style.
Yeah.
And then they got all the sponsors to supply. There's probably, I think there was Microsoft, a lot of Microsoft technology.
Yeah.
In there. So,
yes.
Yeah.
It was a good use of an empty building that.
But not the same at all.
No, like, but it was still sort of fun to go through because it's, you know, it was Imagineered and there was like, it was just
it was air conditioned.
Yeah. But as like a functioning, you know, product or as a thing that you would aspire to, right. To have your house at, it just was like, I don't know, man, half the screens seemed burnt out all the time.
Yeah.
Like this place, like, what is this?
What it's is like this? An East meets West kind of a.
Yeah. Thing.
Yeah. It's a weird vibe.
Yeah.
Is that a leopard print?
It looks like it. I wish it was, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Honestly.
There's a lot of different patterns happening.
There's
here.
A little too many patterns.
I always went there when it was open, but I was always also just kind of disappointed by it. Like, I wanted it to be so cool, and it had so much potential to be so cool, but it was never cool.
Like, and this is supposed to be outside, so it's not, I mean, it obviously it's not outside, but this is where your barbecue is, and you can still have a PDA or whatever of what your light controls are and all that kind of fun stuff, I guess, and cool.
Yeah.
What I noticed when I was there is that people would rush through this, and then wasn't there like an arcade type thing upstairs where people could play computer games? And that was where people ended and spent the most time.
That's where you want to go.
Yeah.
There
was really nothing exciting about this kitchen, whereas the House of the Future.
It's the world's worst island.
See, I was going to say, I think that island's pretty neat because it gives you some workable space.
You can't put any bar stools on that. It's dumb.
Yeah, but no one sits on bar stools anyways.
I remember being in this kitchen and there's like, there was things that you could do. Like there was buttons you could push to turn on the lights and it literally never worked.
No, they never
worked.
Not once.
I do sort of like the inset TV with, you know, with like the picture frame around it. Like it looks, you know, sort of chic. And then your screensaver for that could just be, you know, famous works of art, but at least center it.
Also center the carpet. What is happening with the carpet? Why is it off centered like that?
I don't know.
This is a vibe.
This is a cursed image.
I think we found the person that designed the off center window when they redid Club 33 in New Orleans Square.
Yeah.
Probably the same person that did this.
Probably.
Fired.
Would not surprise me.
Now this is cool.
It's cool, but what kid could have a room like this?
Exactly. Probably the Banks children, who this is definitely, you know, reminiscent of Peter Pan. And then up here, like the projection TV or something.
I'm sorry, you guys don't have a cannon in your kid's room?
I wish.
Peter Pan pops out of the closet at midnight.
Yeah, well, you can afford it at that point. I think we missed one. I don't know if this shot here, Dave, is from this or not.
That's Interventions.
Okay.
I assume one of the bedrooms.
Yeah,
I remember going in this room, being like, "This is my room."
I don't remember this and because it's very like lemon colored, which to me is very mid to late 60s. This is like a late 60s vibe. Yeah, and so I wasn't sure. Maybe it was the House of Tomorrow or the House of Today.
I also think my family had that chair in the corner.
Man.
That's a chair.
Where do you think they got it from?
I mean, honestly, the Goodwill.
And it all starts with this, where it just leads you into like a false sense of security. And it's like when movies, when like bad movies have their characters watching another movie in their movie, and that movie that they're watching is better than the movie that you're watching.
Yeah.
So the unwritten rule, never put a good movie in your terrible movie. That's what this is. A callback to something good in something that is not.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not going to, granted, I am very naive and spacey or absent, whatever. But like,
are you trying to prove it or?
No, I'm trying to find the right word. I probably walked past that computer, that image you had of the old house, the display of the house. I never knew that that's what that was. I never knew that I was walking into like an homage of, not an homage, but like the newer version of what once was. Like, I don't think that ever translated well.
The original House of the Future had, I guess you would call them cast members or employees of Monsanto, you know, that could answer questions and would talk to you. I don't recall.
No, it was a free for all. It was the wild, wild west.
Yeah, they had just basically a Best Buy geek squad there. Like, well, you can buy a warranty on this.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, I think that was really cool, man. Thank you very much for sharing those photos with us.
It's crazy.
A lot more on my website, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And what is your website, Dave?
DaveLandWeb.com/HOF for House of the Future.
There you go.
If you want to see more of those.
And if you're listening to the show, you can go to our website and look at these photos. I will link Dave's just entire category of House of the Future in our website, too, so you can go check these out specifically on the video, then go to his website and look at the House of Future, and then just take some time, like take a break, get your phone, go into a quiet space, like the restroom for half an hour, if you're at work or whatever, and just chill with really cool shots of Disneyland.
Yeah.
One other thing I noticed when I was going through my blog in preparation for tonight.
Yeah.
One of my posts I posted, I guess at an auction a number of years ago, came up a letter that Walt had sent, I think it was to Monsanto, thanking them for the transistor radio that they sent to him after the opening.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
That's adorable, man. I love it. He's like, I'll put it with the rest of them. I love it. All right, Dave, thanks a lot, man. We'll let you split.
Thank you all.
All right, thanks, dude.
Bye, Dave.
Good to see you again.
Bye. You too. That's a good time to take a break, everybody. So let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to finish our little intro stuff. We're going to get to our five things that we love and five things that we don't love about the Disneyland Resort. Hold on. We'll be right back. This is Ears Up. Gee, sorry, guys, but that guy bought 14 churros. I'm all sold out.
And now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging on. Don't worry, we are not going to run out of churros for you. I promise.
Yeah, the guy that kid was talking about was obviously Terrence.
Obviously. I mean, that was a live recording of the aftermath of what happened when Terrence bought 14 churros.
Yeah, you didn't hear the cursing from the next person behind me in line. So.
That's right. I mean, you couldn't tell, but the guy who he bought those churros from, handsome dude. Super handsome guy.
Yeah.
He sounded okay.
Damn. Roasted. Bev, you are on your way. I think in a couple of days you're leaving for Disney World.
I leave on Saturday morning at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I was hoping that the F word was going to be five because
nothing inappropriate.
We all know how much of a morning person you are.
No, you hate yourself.
We've been talking a little bit off and on about how nervous you are and you're trying to plan for everything. And so there's basically no more planning to do. Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel confident you're going to do everything you want to do?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. I believe you, honestly, man. Chill. Like, I believe you.
I'm not saying this because they're sponsors. Like, Concierge has really like come through. My reservations for dining,
mm-hmm.
taken care of. Everything is set. Everything is on. Has already been, like, I didn't have to do anything to the wristband thing.
Oh, the magic band or whatever.
It's already connected. I'm already checked into our hotel.
Wow.
I just
showed up. And they did all that for you? They'd like check you in and stuff?
I had to do the online check-in.
Oh, okay, sure.
They connected my account and everything for me.
Oh, wow.
So everything is going to be theoretically, I mean, I'm always prepared. Like I have everything printed out because I'm a psycho, but also like, yeah. I think everything is also just, it's prepared. Like I think it's going to be a smooth sailing.
Cool.
And I'm super excited about it.
That's great.
I know you never really post anything
ever
anywhere ever, but can you? Because I want to see what happens. I want to see your adventure.
I think what we should have you do is take a bunch of photos and either send them to Maddie, and Maddie can post like, you know, Bev's day at Disney World or something like that. I think people would like to see that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I can do that.
She froze.
I certainly can do that.
Okay, good. What are you looking forward to doing the most?
Going to be our guest.
Going to be our guest.
The Beauty and the Beast restaurant.
Okay.
I've been told multiple times to order extra gray stuff because it's delicious.
Extra gray stuff?
I've heard that too.
What is that even?
Don't believe me?
What's
delicious?
What's gray stuff?
It's from the song. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious.
I think it's don't like a pudding.
Me. Ask the dishes. They can.
I think that's a Dave Matthews song. Gray stuff.
Yes.
Gray stuff.
Oh, I hate you.
Well, that sounds cool, man. It sounds like it's something that would be at that space restaurant, but
the Navi, I'm excited about the river tour or whatever it's called.
Yeah, Rivers of America.
In Avatar.
Yeah.
Land. Yeah.
Not the
Navi River.
That one I'm a little concerned about because I get motion sickness very easily, but the river one looks pretty cool.
You get those wristbands? You gonna try those?
The patches. The
patches. Okay. All right. Well, look, I feel confident you're going to do fine.
Yep.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you.
I am too. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited to
it's hot.
Surprise Abby too.
It's hot there.
It's hot as I'm not going to insert expletive here.
No, you shouldn't do that. All right. Well, let's get to the show, everybody. Five things that we love, five details that we love about the Disneyland Resort, and then five that we hate because why not? You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have the Disneyland Resort.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Who wants to go first?
Well, what are we doing?
Let's do the five things that we don't like first.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, let's start on the wrong foot. Let's get right with the right foot afterwards. You know what I'm trying to say?
Let's get on the good foot.
Yeah, there we go. Who wants to volunteer to go first for the one thing they don't like? And we're just going to go around robin style like we always
do. I'll go first.
All right, Terrence, hit us, baby.
All right. One of the things that I don't like is the fact that there are defunct attractions that are never funked. You know, like it's...
Funk my attractions.
Right. Like, so for instance, the Carousel of Progress. It becomes America Sings, which becomes kind of nothing for a long time. And then it becomes a Star Wars launch bay. And it's just this thing that they're trying to put something in just so that they can fill the space, but they're never trying to make it so it's something that people actually want to go to. That's one of the details I don't like about the park is that.
Okay.
Specifically that entire structure.
Yeah, for sure. It was cool going under it, though.
Oh, yes, it was. That one rail?
I still don't know if we're supposed to talk about that, but whatever.
I don't
know.
I thought you'd come up.
Bev, why don't you go ahead and go next?
Well, since Terrence and I are apparently on the same wavelength, I also have that, but I just called it, I still call it Interventions, even though it's not Interventions.
Yeah.
That place is garbage. It only exists to just take people off of rides and distract them with more trash. Like
it's a people eater.
It's a people eater, but it's also just terrible. And they could tear it down and make it something. Terrence suggested they could tear it down and make it more Autopia, but I almost kicked him out of my house for saying that.
Yeah, I know.
But it could be torn down. And I feel like something of substance could be put there because right now I just think it's dumb. So
yeah,
that's also on my list.
Okay, got it.
All right, so I took this very literally and went with actual like details of the park that I don't like.
Sure.
The first one is, well, actually, I have to be honest. This was on my things I love list. but it got moved, and it's the U.S. mailboxes. I absolutely love that they have them. I think it's so cool that you can mail your postcard from Disneyland. But they don't sell stamps, and they no longer postmark it, so it says from Disneyland. So what is the point?
So it's a mailbox.
It's a mailbox. And I don't know. I just don't like it. I think it's stupid now.
I feel like there probably weren't enough people using it that you can still sort of justify the cost of paying for postage. But I wonder if people were just like mailing their
What do you mean paying for postage? Like you can't. You have to have a stamp to mail it. It's just
no. But I thought that they used to like pick up the post. Oh no, postmark. I see. They stamp a postmark. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it wouldn't say it would say Anaheim, but it would have like a Disney.
Maybe that's
thing.
The USPS decision.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But they could still sell stamps at the very
least. True. Absolutely true. One of the Disneyland details that I hate, and I'm going to say hate, the blocked off Court of Angels in New Orleans Square.
Yeah.
Now it's used as the waiting room for Club 33 guests to ascend up into the dining room. Once again, proving that the wealthy will always take more from us common folk. It bothers me because it is very much like, you know, if you really want to be overly dramatic about it, it's like class warfare sort of a thing where it's like, these are rich-ish people, definitely way upper middle class to hire. We're just going to take this whole area. We're going to take it back from the people. And we're going to give it to them so they can hang out and lounge and they have like, you know, lemon and lime flavored waters and hot towels to wipe your hands. And like you're sitting in there, the unwashed masses are walking by you, but you're separated by this little cool stained glass door. And it's just, it feels very weird and chic, and it shouldn't be in Disneyland. They didn't need to do that.
I agree.
It was weird.
But absolutely. I also really liked being on the other side.
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah, if you're part of the bourgeois.
Yeah, then it's great.
Conrad.
All right. So the second thing, this is a detail kind of, but Star Wars in multiple places. Ooh. You have an entire area that is dedicated to Star Wars at this point, and then you also have overflow. Like, how amazing would it be to have props from the movies within Batuu instead of having them in something that no one goes to? Or you have two completely different simulated, you have three Star Wars rides that are simulators in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Two of them in Galaxy's Edge and one of them in Tomorrowland. You have stormtroopers walking around in Galaxy's Edge and stormtroopers walking around in Tomorrowland.
Interventions.
It just makes no sense. I hate the fact that there's Star Wars spread across Disneyland.
I agree. And it's very much, and I said this as soon as Disney bought it, they are going to suck the life out of Star Wars because they don't understand that the joy of Star Wars is the unknown of Star Wars. Yes, we don't want it rubbed in our faces all the time. Bev, go ahead, please.
I freaking hate Pixie Hollow.
That is a good one. Yes.
Wasn't that where the people from Gilmore Girls lived?
Wow. Yes. That is actually very close.
It is, it's just the worst. Like, you stand in line. If you've never done Pixie Hollow, first of all, don't.
Okay.
If you have, you understand. Stand in line, and then you go to these different little sections and take pictures with these women dressed up as fairies, but you're standing, and it's shady, but it's also still sunny, and it's just dumb. Like, why? Why?
Okay. Fair enough.
Terrible. Oh, sorry, it's me. The Small World ceiling. Now, I'm not sure if this is one of my least favorite details or simply just a lack of detail altogether.
Sure.
But the ceiling of Small World has always bothered me. It's just painted black. And you can see air vents. You can see the HVAC tubing. Like, why not put a false ceiling, a drapery, anything that better immerses you in the fantasy world that you're in for forever? Like,
it is the worst themed anything throughout the entire park. Completely agree with you.
Thank you. Hate it.
Hated it. My next one is the way the tap water tastes.
So that's just LA.
Surely there is something that can be done to prevent the water from the drinking fountains from tasting mildly like blood and dirt. No? I mean, I'm always like, I think I have the gum disease gingivitis because I taste blood and I don't understand. I'm just thirsty.
It's true.
I think they could do something. Honestly, I really do. Terrence.
That's all right. My next one, this is going to sound weird, but hear me out. The people mover tracks in Tomorrowland. Now, okay. I completely understand why they're there. And it makes it a little bit shady. I completely get that. Yeah. But it reminds me every single time I'm in that land that I will never see a vehicle riding on those tracks again. It is the weirdest thing to me that you have something that will never be used again, still there in plain sight. Thank you so much, Michael Eisner, for destroying those tracks.
Yeah.
Well, and it is funny because it's like, oh, it costs money to tear down. Yeah, it also costs money to throw things in interventions. And it also costs money to give, you know, corporate raises. And it also costs money to move your people, your Imagineers to Florida. Like, it costs money to do stuff. Yes.
It would be,
but isn't that worth it? It costs money for Star Wars land.
It would help traffic in that area so much.
Yeah.
It really would.
I agree with you, Terrence. Bev, go ahead, please.
I, and this is a personal thing. I'm just personal thing.
Yep.
I hate that they took out the coffee shop and replaced it with a Starbucks.
Oh my God. Same, bro. Yes.
Hated it. That coffee shop. Okay. The coffee. It was fine. It was coffee. Whatever.
Yeah.
But it was coffee. Because coffee is coffee. But it wasn't $5.
That's true.
And you could go back throughout the day with your receipt and get free refills. And now you wait in line for 20 minutes and get a McFlurry or whatever they sell there.
Yep, McFlurries. That's it.
Frappuccino.
Yeah.
Whatever. Same thing.
McFlurry. The difference is they're
Frappuccino. That one actually really pisses me off.
Their Frappuccino machine never goes down.
Exactly. You can always get a Frappuccino. You can never get a McFlurry.
That one hurt me too, because those are some of like the coolest memories I have of Disneyland. Like, where's the receipt for the coffee? We got to go get a coffee. Let's just go get a coffee. It's fine. It's like 11:30 and you're leaving the park. You're like, why don't we just get a coffee? It's fine. We should get a coffee.
And it's like your last souvenir before you leave.
Yeah.
Coffee's early in the morning, standing there and getting our morning cup of coffee and watching them do the flag ceremony. Mm-hmm. Or not the flag ceremony, but they do like the band would come through and they would do like a
Reveille, God Bless America, or something. Yeah,
it's just like, it was, I always like teared up because it was beautiful and it was just
some
of my favorite memories.
What I liked about it not being Starbucks is that it differentiated your experience between just going to Downtown Disney or going to any other place on the corner of any town ever and getting a Starbucks coffee. It's different. The food in Disneyland hits different. Churros there hit different. The coffee should hit different too. It shouldn't be the same. I don't like it.
It was under no circumstances was it bad coffee. It was good.
It was fine. It sucked. It was terrible.
I think it was better than Starbucks coffee.
I disagree. I disagree. All right, Taryn, go ahead, please.
My third one. I hate the trolley tracks on Main Street.
I thought about doing this one.
I love that. I can appreciate the authenticity of having a real trolley with real trolley tracks. But given the amount of times I've only almost broken an ankle, and now how many times our stroller wheel gets stuck in there, like, just give me a more modern version of a trolley. I'm fine.
I mean, a car.
Same girl, same. Yeah.
They have them. They're called buses.
Yeah.
My third one is the entirety of Buena Vista Street. And I know I'm breaking my own rules here by not being detailed enough with this one, but I can't help it. There's nothing that really impresses me about Buena Vista Street. It looks just kind of bland and not really nuanced enough to reflect LA in the 30s, which is what it's supposed to do. Instead, the shops come off more like a new block of track homes. They all have like identical paint jobs, and the windows maybe are different a little bit, but even the window treatments are boring. The Big Rock Candy Mountain bores me. It's just the whole, like, walking down Buena Vista Street compared to Main Street, it's night and day. There's just nothing there. Buena Vista Street is thoroughly unimaginative.
Yeah.
Terrence, go ahead, please.
All right, I'm thinking of another hate, just because Beth stole mine with Starbucks. But here's my fourth hate. The pointless warehouses and backstage area in DCA. So this area used to have the Millionaire Game, used to have the Muppets, it's right behind Award Wieners. Yeah. Used to have a lot of stuff going on right now. And now they have Monsters, Inc. They have a stage that is rarely used.
Was that Electronica?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, and that thing was sick.
Right. They have a bar there that has somewhat decent beer every once in a while, but it's normally like Micheladas. And it's just a completely unused space. And there's empty buildings where they could do something, but nothing's happening back there.
Yeah, I agree with that. Good one.
Taryn stole mine because absolutely the tracks. What the heck?
Yeah.
They don't need to be there anymore. Make it more authentic. Don't have a trolley. Have it be like a carriage ride, perhaps.
There you go.
But get rid of them. The amount of times I've almost broken an ankle, my stupid stroller wheel has gotten stuck.
Literally, I every time you walk down, you see somebody. If you see somebody struggling with those things, and if you don't see them, then you're that person.
Yeah.
You're the person struggling.
In fact, I think the last time we were there, I'm pretty sure Abby's shoe got stuck in it. To the point where she had to take her shoe off and take her foot out.
She's
and
like, Forrest Gump. Work her shoe out.
I love
the
that.
Stupidest thing I've ever experienced.
I'm glad that happened to her. Taryn, go ahead, please.
The next one, I'm sorry, but the Indiana Jones queue.
Oh,
No, shut your mouth.
Now, okay.
Shut your mouth.
Wow, she's writing for one of those Disney news blogs now.
Hear me out. I really like this queue. It's clearly one of the best ones at Disneyland, maybe the best one. It has all of the elements that might be worth standing in a 60-plus minute standby line. For years, the hieroglyphics on the wall were completely useless without decoders, although, surprisingly, Disney did reintroduce the decoders in 2019, on the Play Disney Parks app, which is cool. But what really grinds my gears is that the bamboo trick to lower the ceiling in the skeleton room doesn't work. It hasn't worked for years, and while I can understand that it's not a priority for them to fix that, also, it can't be that hard to fix. Just fix it.
Wait.
All right.
So that's a detail you hate is the cue because the bamboo thing doesn't work?
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. I love you.
Fight me.
I will. Don't worry about it. But not on camera. I'm agreeing with Terrence. People mover track. Yes, it's good for shade. Yes, it's good for collecting branches, as Jeremy would say. But it still needs to go because it's a reminder of just how spectacularly Disney has failed at one of the more popular rides in Disney history. And I don't think I'm exaggerating much with that statement either. Pull them down, plant some futuristic robot trees or something, and get over it. Just deal with it. Realize the track has to go. Figure it out and make it go. That is one of the worst parts of that land.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's what's really holding that land back from being a lot better. You can keep Intervention. You can keep the meet and greet, the Star Wars blast off space or whatever the hell it's called. But those tracks is just like everybody knows now they're defunct. It's just, it's like having a bunch of broken cars in the lawn on your mansion.
Yard.
Yeah. It's like, just get over it.
Yeah.
Terrence, last one. What's the last detail that you hate about the Disney Resort?
Does anyone know what the Paradise Gardens Park is?
Never heard of it.
No.
What?
Okay. The Paradise Gardens Park is the area of DCA that starts at Ariel and goes all the way back to the emotional whirlwind you get to the entrance to Incredicoaster. That is the most jumbled, non-themed area in any part of Disneyland. You're talking about, even in DCA, you have Avengers Campus, you have Cars Land, you have Buena Vista, you have all these different things, and then here you have the Silly Symphony swings. You have the Golden Zephyr. You have a Paradise Garden. But, you know, hey, over here, every once in a while, we're going to have a thing where we celebrate Cinco de Mayo. And you're going to do that. It's like, it's nothing even makes sense and nothing's even themed.
And an Italian restaurant.
nothing's even themed to each other. It just makes no sense. And it's so weird because that part of DCA harkens back to what DCA was when it opened,
yes.
where it was just throw stuff in there and people will go because it's a place to go.
It's funny yeah. what Disney chooses to spend money on and what they don't choose to spend money on. Like they're doing this yeah. whole hotel thing, yeah. but they're also saving money in a bunch of other places. And it's like, they're saving money and then not spending money to their own detriment. They've scrapped a bunch of stuff that would make people happy. That would bring a sense of newness, but also of retro vibes or however you want to say it. You know, with some of these callbacks like the Haunted Mansion they were talking about doing, you know, stuff like this would be great. Theme this. Make this an area. If people aren't going in this area, why do you think that is? It's yeah. because they choose to be somewhere else because this area stinks. Yeah. So make it something better.
Yeah.
Spend some actual dollars on it. I agree with you. Bev, go ahead, please.
All right. I also came up with this one on the fly because I was just sitting here thinking, like, I didn't have a fourth one because actually it was really particularly hard for me to come up with things I didn't like.
Easy
which
for you
was
to say.
New for me.
Yeah.
But man, I hate that lady that hangs out in front of Carthay with the fake dog.
Yes. She can go away.
Like, I don't understand why she's, and when she, don't ever talk to me. First of yes. all,
I will but say also, she's never
don't
spoken
ever
to
talk
me.
To me with your fake dog and ask me to pet it. Like, cause no, what yeah. is even is that?
That's because I've always no. steered us away from her because I hate her also. That's why she's
oh,
never
God,
spoken
it's awful.
To us.
She's dressed Ugh. In like, I don't know, 30s, 40s garb. And she walks around with this little puppy, little dog thing, but it's actually a puppet and her hands inside of it. And she's like moving it around like, oh, isn't my dog so cute? And I'm like, oh, you're crazy.
Yeah, I just saw this same puppet cool. show four blocks down by the 7-Eleven. It's very different.
No, I hate that. That can go away today.
Yeah, it's a little bothersome. Taryn, go ahead.
Mine is actually similar to Bev's because I'm calling it I don't like bright suns.
Oh.
Now, I'm a fan of the immersive lands, and I really actually do like Galaxy's Edge, but I don't care for their stupid vocabulary. I honestly just, I don't want to be greeted with bright suns or bright moons. I came here to get drunk on a Bespin Fizz or listen to DJ Rex. Like, that's enough immersion for me. Hearing cast members speak the forced, like, new language just feels like bad dinner theater or LARPing.
It you know, it yeah. does. And imagine if you went to, like, New Orleans Square and you heard just, like Cajun Creole.
Yeah, it's...
You know what I mean? It's, like...
inappropriate.
Yeah, it would be tight, but it'd just be like you're just watching Forrest Gump at that point.
Yeah, like I just don't need that in my life. Like, you know, I'm still at Disneyland. I know I'm at Disneyland.
Right.
You know I'm at Disneyland. Let it go.
Let it go. my last one for things I don't like, the entirety of the Esplanade. I know.
What? Really?
Yeah, why? I know. Groups of teens meeting up at the embedded compass uh-huh. rows in the middle of the Esplanade to talk about the latest Starbucks drinks they just bought at Disneyland will be forever angered by my choice, but I'm sticking to it. The Esplanade is, and forever will be, a wasteland, a barren desert devoid of imagination, imagineering, basic design elements, and shade. Drop some friggin' cheese, yo. Let this green place light up a little bit, especially as you transition from the gates of Disneyland with the planters of trees and Disneyland roses and whatnot. You go under the monorail and then nothing but brickwork as far as the eye can see. It's like when you find an unfinished part of a video game map that the designers just walled off, but you manage to find a glitch into. There's so much space there to do something, anything with, that it makes me slightly upset. Give me more shade. Rip out that stupid compass rose. Drop a big fat tree in there. Drop 500 trees in there. Make it a forest to walk through. This is a hot, barren wasteland of a desert thing that I've already said.
What's a compass rose?
You know, when you look on a map and it's like north, south, east, west, and that's, yeah. that's what it is.
Where is that?
In the dead center of
right in the middle
Esplanade.
Of it.
It like sticks up?
No, it's imprinted
no.
on the...
It's implanted.
Oh, it's a design.
Oh, yeah.
See? You don't even know about it. How many times have we walked past it? You don't even know.
Yeah, because I kind of like the Esplanade.
It's but what do you like about it specifically?
Because it makes me it's the first part of being at Disneyland, and I just want to put out my arms and spin like Sound of Music.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be cooler if there was a tree there. All right, Terrence, now let's transition into the details that we love of the Disneyland Resort.
The entirety of Galaxy's Edge. Maybe not the cast members saying, you know, good moon and all that stuff. But
good moon, baby.
All right. But I saw that area for the first time about a month and a half ago. And I walked in with a friend of the show, Brett, and he took me through the area, took me through the land, and I rounded a corner, and in front of me was the Millennium Falcon. And I am a 41-year-old man, and I teared up seeing it because I felt like an 8-year-old kid seeing something that I've always imagined. That land is so immersive in the way they themed it. All of the little details of everything throughout that entire land just drew me in. So my first one is the entirety of Galaxy's Edge.
I'll let it pass.
Area music. I think that is a detail that Disneyland does better than any other theme park I've been to, and I've been to a couple fairly recently, and I've tried to be like conscious of it. Like for example, when we were in Universal, I remember walking through and I was like, oh, this is very reminiscent of Disneyland. Like we're walking down the main drag and I was like, man, but the music's like really loud.
Yeah, is there even music? And what kind of music? Like there is top music 40 hits?
No, so they have Universal's different, but they also have like different areas that are themed to different things. And so the music is themed appropriately, but like there's something about like the way Disney does it. Like you can be having a conversation and then be like, oh, what is that song? Is that the song from Up? And then continue your conversation. Whereas any other place I've been, it's been like, oh, that's loud or like with Disney, we were talking about this earlier, or Terrence and I were talking about this earlier. When you're walking through, the music changes, but it changes so subtly that you don't even recognize that the music has changed. And now you're now you're in Frontierland, and the music you're listening to Frontierland music. I just think that it's a seamless transition, and they do it better than anyone else.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Taryn, go ahead.
All right, my first one is Center Street.
What's Center Street?
Exactly.
I don't know what that is.
I actually didn't know until I looked on Google Maps either. But Center Street is where they have the building facades near the lockers off of Main Street. So right past Starbucks.
Yeah.
And I just really like that area because what I think any other park would have done is just have facades.
Right, not have that little alleyway down there or whatever,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, even if they had the alleyway, it would just be facades. But here they have the painless dentist where you hear dentist drills and patient screams if you stand there long enough. And the Hotel Marceline, which is a nod to Walt's hometown. And you can hear someone singing in the shower and then gargling water and then brushing their teeth and then shaving. And it's like you're listening in on a hotel. And it's just these little unnoticed details on this noisy, busy Main Street that they didn't have to do, but they did. And I think that it's those little things that make Disneyland for me so unique.
I got
it. Is that DCA or Disneyland?
Disneyland.
Look at that, Bev. You learned something today.
Right by the lockers on Main Street. So you're walking down to the right, you go get a coffee.
It's normally missed because you're like, I need to go to a locker. And so you're just walking.
Right.
And then I need to go do the thing. You know what else I need to do?
The 21st Amendment Brewery's latest beer release, Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA, puts an island vacation in their whimsically designed cans. That's right, cans. This refreshing year-round release, Tropical IPA, is brewed with pale and Munich malts, brimming with Azaka, Citra Cryo, and Mosaic hops, and topped with a splash of pineapple flavor. The result is a clean, refreshing beer featuring a mix of sweet malt, balanced bitterness, fruit-forward hops, and a nice tropical vacation at the finish. Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA is available at your local good beer shop, neighborhood taproom, and anywhere else people come together to find great craft beer.
That's right. All right, my first one that I love, the Main Street windows. Specifically, the filigree patterns on the windows around the names They're just amazing looking, and they really do the presentation justice. Just having the person's name isn't enough, and I think that's what a lot of other parks would have done. Just like, here's your name in like block letters, you know, like you're some detective in a novel, right? It's like, boom, frosted glass, here's your name. It really serves as a classy and classic celebration of that particular person being honored. Just the way they design the names and the way they put a lot of passion and effort into making these look like pieces of art, and it's what they are. I love those. They're fantastic. All right, Terrence, what's your next one, baby?
The Smeltizers on Soarin' and throughout the park. So has some kind of scent that they associate with Disneyland. For most people, it's the smell of pirate water. But throughout the park, throughout the park, they intentionally pump smells out in order to help immerse you in where you are, and specifically on Soarin'. So the times where you're going over the ocean, where it smells like you can smell the salt water, or when you're over the orange groves and you can smell the oranges itself. And so it's just that little detail of instead of just trying to have your sight and your sense of feeling, but also your sense of smell come into play as well.
That's a good one.
I love the fact that they continue to honor Walt. Like, I love that they have his apartment with the candle in the
Candle in the wind.
Oh, it seems to me he lived his life like that.
never knowing.
No. Yeah.
I think that's an amazing detail. I think that they're still showing respect to the person who had this dream and brought it to fruition, and it's one of my favorite things.
All right. I like it. Cool. Taryn?
My next one is that they kept the original carpet in the Lily Bell train.
Yes.
I think that they didn't need to. It seems like something that they would have switched because of traffic. But I think it's such an interesting decision to, instead of opening that up and kind of locking everything down but changing the carpet, they instead just made it like harder to get on.
Yeah.
And they don't run it all the time. And I think that that's just a really interesting decision and kind of a cool detail about Disneyland, that they kept that carpet and they kept all of the designs that Lillian chose for that car. And they kept the integrity of her original vision for that, mm-hmm. but still was able to open it to the public in just a sort of a smaller sense. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Mine is the Little Man of Disneyland's house. Based on the children's book of the same name, the house is located at the base of a tree in front of the Indiana Jones queue, the one that Taryn doesn't like, also the one with the sign for the ride on it. Some people think this was in the park at one point, that the Little Man of Disneyland had a house physically in the park, and then it was cemented over for reasons. But I don't think that was the case. I think what people are seeing or remembering were the cemented over holes used by landscapers to move mature trees around the property by drilling holes in the tree trunks and inserting metal poles into them. Then they lifted up, carried the tree over, planted it where it goes, patched up the holes, and then off they went. The detail is great because the tale of Patrick Bagora ties in the development of Disneyland into a fun little story while simultaneously making children think Disney is nice for letting Patrick stay on the property in front of house. It's a very cute little Easter egg that not a lot of people are really going to know about. And it also sort of invites people to ask cast members about it, too. And that is sort of neat because everything that Disneyland is adding is sort of everybody knows about. Star Wars Land, or here's this droid or whatever, right? But not a lot of people are going to know about the Little Man of Disneyland. So it is sort of like a nice throwback, a nice callback, and a nice way for guests to have interactions with cast members, too.
Cool.
Terrence.
So I have to kind of repeat one that you already said, Jason, and it's the windows, not just the Main Street windows. Like, there's a window for a Harper Goff in Adventureland, but there's one that really got me and really got me choked up after watching the Imagineering story, I would say probably 10 times at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's the one for Frank Wells on Main Street. And it's Frank Wells, Seven Summits for Those Who Want to Do It All. And the amazing thing was that at the end of his life, he was a daredevil, 62 years old. He was a daredevil. He died in a helicopter accident going in Nevada, trying to go to one of the most dangerous peaks to ski on. But he had climbed 6 of the 7 summits in the world at this point. There's pictures of him, and he summited the Matterhorn. But Frank Wells is a guy who in many ways helped to save Disneyland and helped to expand Disney into what it was. And when I saw that window on Main Street, I actually did get a little choked up, because he meant a lot to the company. He did a lot to the company. And when you really start researching all of the people who are on there, we wouldn't have the park that we love today if it wasn't for them.
Wow. All right. Bev, go ahead, please.
Again, as I've mentioned previously, I've traveled to some other amusement parks recently, and the cleanliness standard at Disneyland is head and shoulders above all else. The fact that there's no trash around or anything, you know, you kind of take it for granted when you're there, but they do an excellent job of making sure that you are having the nicest, freshest, cleanest experience possible.
Okay, my next one is the garbage cans. Again, think that the garbage cans, they vary from land to land, which is super cool. And they're all themed to the land that they are in. And again, this is something, it's a garbage can. They did not have to do that at all. Like, it's not something anyone would have noticed had they not done it. And so I think it is really cool that they did it. And also, if you think about it, it was actually somebody's job at some point to design a garbage can.
Right.
And honestly, it's a job that I'd be happy doing. I'd be doing. So, I don't know. I think it's cool.
All right. My third one, the wooden sidewalks in Frontierland. And I've made no mistake about this. I love those stupid things. Possibly my favorite thing to walk on, which is a weird thing to say. The wooden sidewalks in Frontierland are one of those details that I feel most parks would overlook. It's a bit odd, however, because you have these authentic looking wooden planks and then you step down onto concrete. I mean, why not make the wooden planks and then you just step down into dirt? I don't know. But I suppose you can only go so far with authenticity. They make a cool sound when you walk on them, and it just adds to the feel of the Frontierland. I will literally go out of my way to walk the full length of these bad boys, taking in the reverb and the thudding sounds my heavy footfalls make as I pretend that the drinking water here will not give me diarrhea.
That is
love it.
Accurate.
Yeah. Love it.
All right, Terrence, go ahead, please.
All right, number four. I love the fact that the majority of rides in Disneyland proper are either inside or you only see the most adventurous portions from the outside. It allows the screams of Splash Mountain to act like a carnival barker beckoning you to see what's going on. It also helps with the theming, because for those of us who have been to like Magic Mountain or anything like that and ask why is, you know, whatever, Riddler's Revenge is because it's literally just painted green.
Right.
But at Disneyland, they have the opportunity to really theme things out. And then you have the most exciting part of the ride outside for people to see.
Very nice. I'm going to disagree with Taryn here. I'm sorry.
Whoa, dude.
I know. One of the details I love is actually the whole entire queue for Indiana Jones. I think that's fair. The wait for that ride is always terrible because it'll inevitably break down three times while you're waiting.
Yeah.
But it's interesting and it's entertaining. And I agree with you. They should fix the ceiling thing. You're not wrong.
I really should have just narrowed it down to that. You're right. And honestly, I do like all of it, but I should have just said, I don't like a bamboo stick is really what
yes,
it is.
But, sure. but I yeah. get it though. It could be more.
Yes.
All right, Taryn.
Me.
You're up.
Okay. This one actually is partly for Bev.
Wow. Look at you guys falling in love. That's cute.
And it's not Disneyland. It's actually Walt Disney World Haunted Mansion Q. Oh, yes. This thing, there is nothing like it. It's
Disney World? What are you talking about?
Yes, I went to Disney World for this one.
It's for the Disneyland Resort. Are you crazy?
We never said that.
Yes, we did.
We didn't specify that.
No, we did.
No, we didn't.
It's literally in the name of the show.
It's literally in the name of the show.
But
I'm breaking a rule. I don't
okay.
care.
All right, Taryn's breaking the rule, everybody.
The Haunted Mansion queue at Walt Disney World is almost as fun as the ride. You can speak to the nearly departed, with in the Spectrecom. You can play musical instruments on the tombstones. You can play a stone organ. This is all in the queue, and the, right. the stone organ blows smoke. You can get sneezed on by a dead captain.
That's coronavirus.
Yeah, and it's not a real person. That's so it's just water. And finally, watching Madame Leota's tombstone not only move but very subtly blink right before you get into the ride building. It's just amazing. It's such a great cue.
I'm excited. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too, man. My next one is the small seashells in the concrete at Ariel's Adventure. And I want you to count how many times I say the word concrete in this because I couldn't think of another word. Over in DCA, there's a small ride you may never have heard about called Being Submerged in the Lake by Arthur C. Miller. I may have that wrong, but I don't know. The name is something like that. Okay. Anyway, as you enter the queue for this ride, look down at the concrete as you travel at walking speed because this thing is always a walk-on, and you'll notice small seashells crushed up and scattered on top of the concrete. What a great little detail to add here, and I'm assuming you're supposed to be at the beach as you walk into the ride. I don't know, but either way, this little addition helps set the stage for you being underwater. Another cute detail that did not have to be there. Omitting the shells would not have taken anything away from the ride queue at all, but adding them definitely enhances it. Go ahead, nice. Terrence.
Oh, all right. Awesome.
Pavement, cement.
All right, here's my last one.
Yeah, go for it.
The nods to where past things have stood. So we talked about it a little bit with Dave, the fact that there is still the concrete from where the house of the future stood. But the fact that there is Melvin, Buff, and Max from the Country Bear Playhouse that are still bust within Winnie the Pooh. The fact that there is still the Eeyore parking sign in the queue for Indy. I like the fact that they did not just plow over areas of the park and say, okay, well, we're done. We're not going to even remember anything that's happened there before. But the fact that they have incorporated what used to be there into what's there now. I think that's an amazing, amazing detail.
Agreed.
Good job.
That's pretty cool.
All right, Bev. Let's hear it.
Okay. This one deviates a little bit because it's not necessarily a detail.
Oh, God.
However.
Here we go. But in Shanghai Disney.
No, but.
The bathroom smelled good.
It's still Disney.
Okay,
good. It's still Disneyland.
All right.
And it actually was one of my hates, and then I moved it over to one of my loves. And that is their ability to crowd control.
Okay, I'll allow it. I will allow this one.
With like parades, for example. I was at first I was like, man, they do such a crap job, like when you're walking by and you have to like and the guy's like with the lights and he's, and I was like, well, what, come up with a better solution. There's no better. they do the best job they can with the space that they have.
Yeah.
And they do it well, and they do it fast. Like, it is a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Highly trained.
That is highly trained. And that is my last one.
Okay. Very good. Taryn.
All right. This one is a little similar to Bev's previous one, which is that Walt Disney himself is everywhere. And I love that even when somebody like Michael Eisner takes over, there are still many elements in the park that forever remain Walt's vision. For example, and I have three examples. One is Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. That could have been and probably should have been removed or replaced 100 times by now. It's not a popular attraction. It's boring. It takes a lot
God,
of space.
Oh, my God, that sucks so bad.
But
I hate that thing.
It hasn't been removed, and I can only imagine that it's because it just screams Walt. There's no other reason to keep it.
Yeah.
The next example is the flag ceremony, which is a direct connection to Walt's undying love for America and something that I think a lot of people don't even know about, but it still happens every single day. And then my last example of this is Lillian's Petrified Rock. There is literally zero reason for this to be in the park. It would actually be much better suited for the Walt Disney Family Museum. But it's there at Disneyland because it's a part of Walt, and it's a small reminder that behind the billions of dollars, behind the acquisitions and the blockbuster movies, there was a man with a family and a vision to have a park that was safe and welcoming to all.
Wow.
Who have money.
Yeah. You were very sensitive today when you wrote that.
Yeah. Thanks, Ben.
Anytime.
All right. My last one is the old espresso machine in Cafe Orleans.
Oh,
you guys seen this thing?
No.
Well, when New Orleans Square opened in 1966, the cafe there was actually called the Creole Cafe and featured an impressive and elegant espresso machine made by Adile. The machine was crafted in 1905 and was supposedly purchased by Walt himself. Now, the Disney Parks blog posted a photo of Walt standing in front of the espresso machine with a gal who supposedly works at the place, whatever, only a few months before he passed away. Like, I think it was like 2 months before he died. He was there. And they made no such claims about who actually bought the machine. So I'm going to go ahead and say that Walt did not buy this specific machine himself to put into the park. I feel like that was just an addition that someone, that one of the Imagineers made or whatever. But people like to say, oh, Walt bought this. But if Walt had bought this, it would be on record and the record would be in the archives. And then that would have been used to post this Disney Parks blog thing. So if the Disney Parks blog themselves are not confirming this, I'm going to go ahead and say that that's not actually true. But there is still a cool detail here anyway. This machine, the Adile, is considered the world's first commercial espresso machine. I hate it when people say espresso. I hate that so much. The world's first commercial espresso machine. The world's first commercial espresso machine. This was built in 1905.
That's crazy. Wow.
This machine literally was off the run of the world's first commercial espresso. It's the first commercial espresso machine, giving Cafe Orleans a little bit of history right off the bat. The Adile is non-functioning now, which is probably good because the shots it would pull would taste more like strong filtered coffee than the espresso we know today. Modern machines push steam at 9 bar through the portafilter, and this one used to push like under 2 bar.
Okay.
Plus, it would only heat the water to about 140 degrees versus the much hotter temperatures we require for modern espresso, which is like 190.
What do you mean? I order mine kids temp every time.
Yeah, but they don't control the temperature of the espresso water. They just water it down or put ice in it.
What?
Sorry. Yeah. You can't control the, because the water's in a tank.
No, they can. No, I know. No, but they control how hot your drink has because it has a little like thermometer thing in it. I always order mine at 140 degrees.
How hot your drink has?
Well, because she's having a latte. Just having espresso.
Okay. See, right. I'm talking espresso shots.
I'm sorry. I'm having a latte.
Okay. Yeah. So then that's the steamed milk. This is the espresso. So the espresso water comes out at like 190, 195, something like that. Back in the day, that's 140. That's like green tea temperature. That is not very hot. So these espresso machines didn't make very good coffee from the get-go, and they took like 45 seconds to pull a shot, where the Starbucks standard is 10 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Knock that in and out. So anyway, it's good that it doesn't actually like work anymore. However, it's still in the back. Walt definitely was there. He's posed by it, drinking espresso from it. So it is kind of a cool thing. The very first espresso machine off the line there. Kind of fun. And that is 5 things we hate and 5 things we love about, mostly about the Disneyland Resort. Because apparently some people don't read too good.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Good one.
Thanks, man.
This is better than I thought it was going to be, frankly.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm telling you, it was... What?
I have my thing.
Oh, my God. Do we really got to do it?
We don't have to, but I put time and effort into it.
Can we just do it later?
Okay.
Do it for the next show? How long is it going to take?
It's 1 page of writing.
Oh, my God.
We can do it on the next show. That's fine.
You want to do
the
next show?
I think we should do it. I'm super excited about it. Let's do it.
Who that?
I thought I got away with it.
Who's that? Who's that? Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that? Who's that?
Still proud of that. this is about Riley's imaginary boyfriend from Inside Out. So Inside Out is, in my opinion, one of the best Pixar films ever made. It is totally relatable on a preteen, pre-puberty level. And it's one of my favorite parts of the entire movie is Riley's imaginary boyfriend. Now, the imaginary boyfriends... plural, are located in Riley's mind and presumably the embodiment of Riley's idea of the ideal boyfriend. He's from Canada. He takes lots of selfies. He has perfectly shaggy hair and, of course, would die for Riley. Joy, Sadness, and Bing Bong only know Riley as a child at this point and have never seen her show interest in a boy, which confuses the emotion characters in what I believe is a beautiful visual of the confusion that's experienced during early puberty. Joy later takes advantage of the imaginary boyfriend's undying devotion to Riley and uses a generator in the Imagination Land and collects a large group of the boyfriends to use as a catapult, allowing her to reach the headquarters. And after successfully helping Joy, the imaginary boyfriends fall into the memory dump and have effectively died for Riley. Now,
I would die for Riley.
The character of the imaginary boyfriend was based on the production team asking a large group of preteens what their ideal boyfriend would look and act like.
Canadian.
According to Inside Out's director, Pete Docter, the super tight skinny jeans and perfectly floppy hair was inspired by none other than One Direction's Harry Styles. Now, Riley's imaginary boyfriends don't appear in any other movies or at the parks, but at the very end of the movie, Riley does bump into a real-life boy at the ice skating rink, and this boy turns out to be named Jordan. And while his time in the movie Inside Out is less than 30 seconds, he does have a larger role in the Pixar animated short Riley's First Date. Now, who is behind the character of the imaginary boyfriend? It's a man named Nick Patera, and he is the voice of the imaginary boyfriend. He only has one line that's repeated over and over again, and that is, "I would die for Riley." Voice acting, however, is not his day job. He works full-time at Pixar Studios as a set modeling artist. And in his free time, he's actually a YouTube celebrity who is one of the single most talented singers I've ever heard. His most popular video, which is a cover of Aladdin's A Whole New World, has over 36 million views, and his second most popular has over 20 million views, and he sings a melody of Disney songs, both the female and the male voices, and it's mind-blowing. I thought it was stupid when I first watched it because I thought that he wasn't really singing the songs, and I thought he just had put this all together, and then I found out that he actually is singing, and it's mind-blowing. The role of Riley's imaginary boyfriend is small, but it's important. They literally and figuratively catapult the story forward while also being one of the funniest parts of the film. The selfies, tight jeans, and hair are more generic imaginary boyfriend traits, but the fact that he's from Canada and Riley's sport of choice is hockey are the real details that help bring Riley's character and a movie about preteen emotions to life.
Very good.
But yeah, check out Nick Patera on YouTube. It's very fascinating.
Who's that? Who's that? Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who's that? Who is that? That's really a good question. One that we'll solve later on. All right, well, I think we have a good show, everybody. What do you think? You did all right.
So too.
Yeah.
Thanks to Dave Land Web. I mean, I guess thanks to Dave. Go to DaveLandWeb.com and get your history tour on. You know what I'm trying to say? All right, next week, I don't know the date yet, but we're going to have in-depth for sure. It's been a hot minute. It's been like 2 weeks since we've released any content on this channel.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know, right? It felt really odd. I tried to like bully Jeremy into doing an in-depth last week, and he's like, I'm just too busy. All right, it's fine. I get it. I get busy, too. Also, he lives on the East Coast where there are like 100 hurricanes. So I get it. But anyway, we're going to try to figure all that kind of stuff out. Fact of the show. Walt's idea for Disneyland started back in the 30s, but grew into something obtainable in the 50s. Even before the story of the park being across from the studios, Walt actually had the idea to build an even smaller space on the studio property itself, specifically for the children of the employees to go visit. One attraction of note would have been a singing waterfall.
Huh.
So, you know, we always hear Disneyland evolved because he wanted to have like a 2-acre park across the street. That was actually the second idea. The first idea was a place on the property itself, just for the kids.
Huh.
Of the employees. Kind of cool.
That's
cool. Never heard of that
super
before.
Super cool.
Yeah. A singing waterfall. Good idea, nice. Walt. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. Again, thanks to Dave Lynn Webb. Check him out. Go to ConciEars, ConciEars.com. If you are booking shows, if you're booking trips to any of the Disney parks, if you're trying to get on those cruises, trying to do all that fun stuff, ConciEars.com. They will help you book everything. They helped Bev. They changed Bev's life around.
They did.
Yeah.
They took care of me. I would have been just completely lost.
Absolutely.
They hooked your girl up.
Yeah. ConciEars.com. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Don't forget to ask for the 21st Amendment beers wherever you find good craft beer, hopefully in and around DCA. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. We'll see you.